Hey, thanks so much for listening to this message. My name is Jason, and I'm one of the ministers here at the Madison Church of Christ. It's our hope and prayer that the teaching from God's Word you hear today will bless your life and draw you closer to Him. If you're ever in the Madison, Alabama area, we'd love for you to worship with us on Sundays at 8:30 or 10:30 a.m. If you have any other questions about the Bible or want to know more about the Madison Church, find us at madisonchurch.org. Be sure to also check out our Bible study podcast, Madison Church of Christ Bible Studies. Thanks again for stopping by.
They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not grow weary. They shall walk and not faint. Beautiful, beautiful words. But notice, they that wait upon the Lord. How hard it is to wait. We dread waiting. And yet we must wait on the Lord. You know, we live in the age when everything has to be fast. Fast foods, a fast oatmeal. This chip will bring you, you'll be able to download so many seconds faster and all of that on the run. But God's schedule is not the same as our schedule. In Genesis 13, after Abraham and Lot had separated, God said to Abraham, "Now you walk up and down the land, and I'll give you every piece that your foot steps on." And yet in Genesis 15, the Lord said, "Now, it won't be in your day, Abraham. In fact, your descendants will be in a foreign land for 400 years. And there they will serve and be ill-treated. After that, they will get the land." And so Abraham never owned anything except the field of Machpelah that he bought to have a burial place for his wife. Then we have the case in Daniel chapter 10, that's very interesting. Daniel knew of the prophecy of Jeremiah that the people would be 40 or 70 years in bondage and then be able to return. Well, he began to calculate. 606, as we count it, B.C., when Nebuchadnezzar took Jerusalem. And now the date had come forward to 536 B.C., 70 years. And so Daniel began to earnestly pray and fast. Can this be the time? Is it right for some to go back to their promised land? Well, Daniel did not receive answer to his prayer for 3 weeks. He had to wait until the Lord brought him the answer to his prayer. You know, there are some that have not waited, and because of it have had disastrous results. I think about Abraham. When God called Abraham from Haran to go into the land that he would show him, Abraham was at that time 75 years old, Sarah 65 years old. Sarah was barren. They apparently had no hope of having children. But God said, "I'm going to make of you a great nation." And already Abraham had decided that Eliezer of Damascus, a trusted servant, would be his heir. And he said to the Lord, "Let him inherit." The Lord said, "No, it's going to be your son, come from your body, this promised land or this promised posterity that you'll have." Well, 10 years went by. No child. Sarah, no doubt under a great deal of pressure since she was the barren one, had a good idea. She had a handmaid, Hagar, and by the law of the land, when a handmaid bore a child, well, then actually belonged to her mistress. And since Abraham would beget the child, well, then it would be his son, and then she would have it through Hagar. And so she suggested that to Abraham. Abraham said, "Good." And a child was born. And Abraham said, "Lord, let Ishmael inherit." God said, "No. Not only will it be your child, but it'll be yours and Sarah's child." Well, because they did not wait, look at what happened. First of all, Sarah had to endure the tauntings that came from Hagar because she had borne a child, and I'm now the mother of your husband's child. And because of those taunings, well, then Sarah made her life so hard on Hagar that she had to run away, and then an angel sent her back. And because of what they had done, when Ishmael was 13 and Isaac was born, and then sometimes after that they had the weaning for Isaac, and during that celebration apparently Ishmael was taunting Isaac, and because of it Sarah said, get rid of that woman, get that boy out of here, he will not inherit with my son. Well, that was grievous to Abraham. Ishmael was just as much his son as Isaac was, but God said, do what you said. And so Abraham had to give a loaf of bread, skin of water, send his son away. Now you think about what that did to Ishmael himself. When the angel sent Hagar back, the angel said, his hand shall be against every man, and every man's hands will be against his. Well, he said also that Hagar would be the father of great nations, 12 sons, heads of 12 Arab tribes. And look what we've had ever since over in the Middle East. The Arabs, Palestinians versus the Jews, all going back to this hurry up that Abraham and Sarah could not wait for the Lord's time. I mentioned also Daniel 10, and here we find that because of the delay there, Daniel had to wait for 3 weeks, but then he learned the reason for the delay was that the mighty angel that was sent to bring him the message had to fight for 21 days with the prince of Persia, apparently some kind of celestial war, until Gabriel came, relieved him, then he could bring the message to Daniel. And so we have to wait until the Lord's time is ready. And you know, this is something that Samuel learned, or not Samuel, something that, yes, he had to learn. When the Lord sent him to the house of Jesse, he said, you go there because the king that is going to come, a man after my own heart, is there. He told Jesse to bring his sons that he might see them all. Well, he brought 7 of them. And when Samuel saw Eliab, he said, that's the one. God said, no. You look on the outside appearance, I look on the heart. He's not the one. Well, then came Abinadab, not him. Shammah, not Shammah. 4 others, no. And then Samuel said, don't you have someone else? He said, there's a boy. I didn't think you'd be interested in him. He's out taking care of the sheep. Bring him in. And David was the one, of course, that God selected. So we have to wait for the Lord. Let me give you another example of where disaster resulted because they did not wait. The Lord selected Saul, son of Kish of the tribe of Benjamin, to be the first king of Israel. When he started out, great start, humble man. And then one thing that endeared him to the people was when the people of Jabesh Gilead were attacked by Ammonites with a far superior force, they begged for conditions of peace. The Ammonites said, all right, we'll give you conditions of peace, but every man will have his right eye put out as a sign of disgrace to the whole city. They said, well, give us 7 days and we'll give you our answer. You might wonder why they would allow them to try to find help for 7 days, because apparently the Ammonites felt like we can handle any that come, be more booty for the soldiers. Well, word of this got to Saul. And Saul took a yoke of oxen, cut it to pieces, sent them throughout the tribe, said, so shall it be done to every man's oxen that doesn't gather for the battle. Well, they did gather. They did relieve the people of of Jabesh-Gilead, and then Saul was declared king of the nation. Well, this aroused the anger of the Philistines. They began to marshal forces to come against them. Samuel said to Saul, "Now you go to Gilgal. In 7 days, meet me there, and I'll offer a sacrifice. Then you go to the battle." Well, 7 days came, and the army of Saul was disappearing. Some of the people had gone across the Jordan. Some were hiding in the thickets. And then here this massive army of the Philistines was coming. And so sometimes before the seventh day was over, Saul said, "Bring me the sacrifice." He sacrificed, and I don't think the smoke had gone down from the altar before Samuel arrived. And Samuel said, "What have you done?" "Well, you didn't come, and I forced myself to do this." He said, "You've done foolishly. Because of this, you will not have a dynasty. Your children will not succeed you to the throne." And you know, sometimes when one starts downward, well, he goes deeper and deeper. Because soon after that, he was sent to utterly destroy the Amalekites. Instead, he kept the king alive and the best of the herds and the flocks. And because of that, Samuel said, "You will not continue in your reign of this people. God has found him a man after his own heart." And so Saul died and his three sons are on Mount Gilboa. All of it started because he didn't have the patience to wait. Wait on the Lord. Question arises, why does God have us wait? I don't know the mind of God. Job said in Job 9 verse 10 that God does wondrous things past finding out. We cannot know the mind of God and why he does. But let me suggest some things, looking at other examples that might give us an answer as to some reasons why God has us wait. We mentioned Daniel. In this case, Daniel had to wait in line, as it were, wait for his turn. You know, God has millions of requests, and we see only our little part of the world, and we don't realize that other things may have to be done before this can take place. So Daniel waited 3 weeks till his turn came. Take in the case of Abraham, when God promised him the land, and yet it would not be until some hundreds of years later. At that time, Isaac had not been born. And when Isaac married at the age of 60, well, then Jacob was born. When Jacob went into Egypt, he was 130. So you see, almost 600 years later, it was before the people came out of Egypt. Now, two things had to happen. Number one, the Lord told Abraham, when he said, "You're going to have to, this weight will be in," he said in Genesis 15, verse 15, "The iniquity of the Amorite is not yet full." In other words, I cannot be just and send people in to annihilate these people until they become so wicked that there is no redemption possible for them. Sort of like it was back in Genesis 6. When the thought of man's heart was only evil continually, God planned the flood to come. But even then, in his long-suffering, he waited 120 years to allow Noah to build the ark and to be a preacher of righteousness, to try to get others to come into the ark with him, but, as we know, succeeded only in winning his own immediate family. And so things have to take place. One was the Amorites had to become wicked enough for God to destroy them. Another, the descendants of Abraham had to get to the number and the strength and the power before they could ever take the land. When they went down into Egypt, there were 75. But with a rapid multiplication, an unusually rapid birthing of people and growing there, and then the hardship of the work made them strong. In addition, they were isolated and became a bonded people. They grew into a nation in Egypt. In fact, When Jacob stopped at Beersheba, offered to sacrifice to God, God said, don't fear to go into Egypt, because there I will make you a great nation. And so they had to get to the point that they could come out. And so maybe a lot of times when we are waiting for something, other things in all of the universe are taking place in order to make it possible for God to bring about what we are asking for and to grant us our request. Maybe sometimes the Lord waits because he wants to see if we really, really want what we're asking for. I think about in 1 Kings 18 when Elijah had his contest with the prophets of Baal in the wicked reign of King Ahab. After the prophets were slain, then Elijah said to Ahab, get ready, go eat and drink, because the famine and the drought is coming to an end. Well, Elijah then went to the top of the mountain, prayed to God for rain, sent his servant to look. Skies were clear. Second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth time, not a cloud in the sky. Seventh time, there was a cloud about the size of a man's hand. And then Elijah said, tell the king he better get to Jezreel, because the rain is coming. And there was a downpour according to the prophet's word. So he may want to know, do we really want what we're asking for? Or it may be that he's preparing us for the answer that we're going to receive. You know, prayer changes the mind of God and also changes the mind of the prayer. In Isaiah 38, King Hezekiah, good king of Judah, was visited by his good friend, the prophet Isaiah. And Isaiah said, set your house in order. You're going to die. He had a boil, apparently a cancerous boil. And Isaiah said, your end is coming. Isaiah went out. Hezekiah prayed to God. And here he was, 39 years old. And there the Assyrians were at the door, threatening the very existence of the nation. And he had no heir. God listened to him. And before Isaiah got out of the courtyard, sent him back and said, God has granted you 15 more years to live. So prayer can change the mind of God. It also can change our mind and our way of thinking about what we ask for. Had a good friend in Birmingham, Nonnie Blankenship, whose mother had a stroke. And Nonnie said that she prayed, spare my mother, just keep her alive, give her back to me alive any way that you want, but let her live. Well, her mother did live for 2 years, never recognized her daughter. Nonnie had to take care of her like you would a newborn baby all of that time. And then after that experience, she said, if I had it to do over, I wouldn't pray that prayer. And so sometimes God waits in order that we might receive the answer that he has for us. Or it may just be a wait to build up our faith, where we really realize how much faith we have. I think about that command of God to Abraham in Genesis 22. Take your son, your only son whom you love, Isaac, and go to Moriah, and there offer him as a burnt offering. Abraham could have thought of a dozen things that didn't fit into. Had 3 days to think of it as he traveled to Moriah. When he got there, he went up into the mountain with Isaac, made his altar, laid the wood on it, tied his son on it, raised the knife, and an angel said, stay thy hand. Now, God knows you'll not withhold anything from me. Now, God is omnipotent. God knew that Abraham would not. But Abraham did not realize the real depth and the strength of his faith until he followed those directions and then was stopped by God. He thought that he'd kill Isaac. The Hebrew writer says that he thought he'd raise him from the dead. And so sometimes the Lord may be waiting for us to realize just what we can stand and what our faith will stand. And even though we hate the waiting time, but the big question, what do we do when we're waiting? How can we learn to wait? First of all, examine what we're waiting for and be sure this is the right thing that we have asked for, that we are expecting. In 1 John 5 and verses 13 and 14, John said, "This is the confidence that we have, that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. We should not want anything that is not according to God's will." And so every prayer should have the codicil, "Not my will, but thine be done," as God's own Son gave to his prayer there in the Garden of Gethsemane. And so, is my cause right? And we don't want to be blessed or cursed with the answered prayer. In Psalms 116, verse 15, in relating the history of Israel, there in the wilderness in particular, referring to the time when they got tired of this old light bread, as they call the manna, and wanted meat, God gave them meat. But then many died because of their lust for the meat. And so the psalmist said, God gave them the desires of their heart, but sent leanness into their souls. So we don't want prayers answered that are going to bring leanness into our souls. So number one, be sure that this is a right request, that we are waiting for the right thing. Number two, review in your mind what you know about God's faithfulness. There are certain principles you know that are right and are true. For example, Hebrews 6:12, God cannot lie. If he promises you something, he cannot lie about the promise. Number two, we know that God loves us. Paul wrote in Romans 8, verse 32, "For he that spared not his own son, but freely gave him up for us all, shall he not with him freely give us all things?" In other words, if God would give us his son, he'll give us anything that we ask for that's good for us. And then realize that God has the power. You know, we might make promises in all good faith and not have the power to fulfill them. But God has the power. Ephesians 3 and verse 20. "Unto him that is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think." God can do more than we can think of his asking him to do. So then when we have these put together, we see the power of God. And then number three, after we have done this, after we have checked the rightness of our cause, after we have reviewed our faith in God, then just hold on. Hold on. Be like Job. Job 13, 15, "Though he slay me, still will I trust him." And David was one that was in danger much of his life, and he had to wait oftentimes. In fact, in the book of Psalms, "How long" is used some 22 times. But in Psalms 27, and there in about verse 13, 14, David says, "I would have fainted in my heart had I not believed that I should see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living." Wait for the Lord and renew your, and give your courage, and he will strengthen your heart. Then he says, "Wait, I say, on the Lord." And so you just hang on until the waiting time is over. Remember the promise there in Isaiah 40. They that wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not grow weary. They shall walk and not faint. One thing we must not wait for. If we're not right with God, we can't put off getting right. Paul said in 2 Corinthians 2, verse 6, "Behold, now is the acceptable time. Now is the day of salvation." James warns about thinking about tomorrow. He says, "You know not what tomorrow will bring forth." Solomon said, "Boast not thyself about tomorrow, for you know not what tomorrow will be." If you need to get right with God, now's the time. If you need to become a child of God through faith, give up your sin, confess your faith, be buried with the Lord in baptism. If you have other needs, to be restored, confess, repent. If it's public and we can pray with you and for you, we're ready. If you have other requests, let us know as together we stand to sing.